traffic jams, tailgating, pileups. Ugh, the joys of driving. How could it get worse? The federal government wants to have a say in what you drive. That's right. The Biden administration's EPA is pushing mandates that would ban 2 out of every 3 vehicles on the road today. Don't let Washington become your backseat driver. Protect the freedom of driving your way. Visit EnergyCitizens.org. Paid for by the American Petroleum Institute.
Get informed, get inspired, and get connected. CannabisRadio.com presents NCIA's Cannabis Industry Voice. The National Cannabis Industry Association is the only national trade organization representing the businesses of the legal cannabis industry. NCIA's Cannabis Industry Voice covers a range of topics, including the rapidly evolving political and policy changes that affect our industry, news and events of importance to cannabis professionals, and features on companies, individuals, and campaigns at the cutting edge of the cannabis industry. NCIA's Cannabis Industry Voice begins now.
All right, we are sitting here in NCIA's podcast studio on the expo floor of NCIA's 7th Annual Cannabis Business Summit and Expo. As I've mentioned, we are getting to see people again in person, in the flesh, and meet new people. And I have a new person here in my podcast studio. Her name's Solange Burnett, and she is a social media influencer. Can you tell me more about that social media world?
OMG. The fact that you called me a social media influencer, just like, I think I had hives now. That is something that just like kind of happened from talking about topics that really resonated with people during the pandemic. But I have a cannabis company called Humble Bloom that's based in New York. But we do even experiences out here in California. We've done things like take people to Astor Farms so that they can experience this sun-grown organic hemp that uses regenerative agriculture practices, and then just be in community, like consumers, people at corporations, people that are activists and advocates around well-being folks, and just have a weekend retreat. So we do like retreats, we do cohort learning models like fem care sessions and men's sessions on vulnerability and performance. So we're really about community and culture. And I am on the Resistance Revival Chorus. And so I'm a singer. I've been really in arts and music for a long time, as well as a nonprofit. So it's like the influence thing is exciting in some ways. It's also like there's a whole connotation to that, that I'm like, I feel like I'm more an educator and creator.
Like,
especially on cannabis, you know, and all the intersections.
Yeah, I'm new to this social media influencer concept myself, but there's so much more to you based on what you just shared as well. What drew you to the world of cannabis as both a movement and an industry?
Yeah, so I feel like cannabis is just an opportunity to shift mindsets and hearts and really change culture on a broad scale because of the intersections of so many things, whether we're talking about medicine or we're talking about sustainability of communities and of individuals and, you know, making some kind of wealth in your generation as an individual.
What a concept.
Like, I know, can we maybe help these millennials, right? But yeah, fem care, it's talking about like PTSD. There's like literally it touches on so many things that it's an opportunity to really make change. So that was really attractive to me. And also, I just love weed. Like, I'm the type, as I said, was a musician as well, and a lot of folks were into other drugs and actually had some bias against cannabis when I was doing that kind of stuff in the particular community I was in. Really Euro, really like tech and techno rock kind of energy, and it was a little bit like unnerving for me to be the black woman smoker, you know, in the group of people who didn't look like me. And so I've always made statements by normalizing the plant and using it publicly, even when it's in an illegal space like New York, because New York just went adult use recently, and I've been doing this for years.
Right.
Yeah, so I think it's like activism, like you do it, you know, and cannabis is just an opportunity for that.
Absolutely. One phrase that I've heard over the years is that, you know, there is a culture of the plant. There are lessons that the plant teaches us. And I really love that concept.
Oh, yeah.
because you know, I myself have used cannabis for 20 years now, and I use it for self-care. Yeah. You know, I'm not using it to really get messed up, but that's fine too. But
yeah, no.
But and at I the same time, yeah.
Think of the full spectrum of usage, right? Like, and who and how people get intertwined with it.
Sure.
And I think the mindfulness element for me has also been huge. During the pandemic, you know, you're alone in Brooklyn by yourself trying to figure out how to stay mentally and physically sound without people around you. And I've been very cautious because I care about community. I don't want to be in spaces and places where I could, you know, hurt people potentially by putting other people at risk. So I did stay pretty isolated. I started doing breath work a lot weekly. So I learned how to like shift my body biologically and physiologically just through the power of my own breath. And at that time period, to think about breath just being a radical act in itself, one, because of the pandemic, but two, Black Lives Matter and people literally not being able to breathe. It's like I really leaned into that, coupled with cannabis, to feel into flow and to be able to be creative and to be able to feel safe. And just have that like level of homeostasis that was so desperately needed.
Yeah, cannabis was deemed an essential business in almost every state except Massachusetts during the most strictest of those lockdowns in early 2020. And I think that just was an incredible revelation that, wow, it was mind-blowing.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, that was a moment where you realized that like we all need this plant. It is intertwined with our minds, it is intertwined with our bodies, our physical health, our mental well-being, our ability to share and be in community with people, to feel culturally aligned with folks. Like, weed does all of that. And I think that we finally had this mainstream moment, right? But yeah. Even with that,
it's still illegal.
So it's this, that is what cannabis is though. It is like so much happening at the same time. And you're literally like, how could we be deemed essential but still be illegal? Makes no freaking sense. Frickin' sense.
So federal legalization is, you know, the big goal that we're all working toward in this really fancy state-by-state system we have here in the United States, where it's one state at a time. And, you know,
we're all like different countries, honey. Yeah. I feel like I'm exploring when I come from New York to California.
Yes, absolutely. You know? We should start taking bets on the last states to legalize, right?
Oh,
you know,
God.
that's a good...
I feel like some won't.
Right.
They're like giant opt-out neighborhoods.
Sure. Yeah. Well, their loss.
They're stupid.
So other things to look forward to as our industry continues to evolve is the continued efforts for diversity, equity, and inclusion in the cannabis space, which it's a focus for all industries right now, in particular, finally, appropriately so. But cannabis is really has an opportunity to do even more for the communities that were most impacted by the war on drugs historically. What are your thoughts around the DEI efforts that the cannabis industry is working through right now?
Well, I hate to be a Debbie Downer, but I was just reading stats about this, and cannabis is failing. We're really good at talking the talk in this industry and like knowing terminologies and being really verbose and sitting and being intellectual about shit. But when it comes down to the action, the numbers are showing that both when you look at women in leadership or femmes in leadership, as well as the global majority, BIPOC, whatever you want to call us, this melanated group of folks, all on the decline. From 2019 to 2021, it was literally like a 16-point slip for Black folks in leadership positions. And for women, we're now back to the average of everybody else, like across industries. But literally the Black and brown people are at like 13%, which is lower than the nation standard across all industries. So cannabis is doing a shit job of action. We don't have social equity programs that work. We have predatory investors. We have a lot of problems. And also when it comes to sustainability and like whitewashing and greenwashing shit, when cannabis again is an opportunity to actually heal, but we're going for a harm situation. Whether it's producing in ways that are energy consuming, and trying to say that this is good, and then having more CO output. Colorado had more CO output that came from cannabis plants than the coal industry. And Colorado is a coal industry state. Like, we have a problem, Houston. So we've got to be like really real about what is actually happening in the industry and what we're just talking about. And you know, I've been really trying to help folks figure out that like, legislation is the love language we need to get into. We have set up systems where people who have access to money are the only ones who get access to information. So we're so far behind, even if we talk about social equity in states. It's like, come on, honey. And we're not setting up things that could be cooperative so that small farms and small businesses can work together. It's like just vertical integration, like separation is not enough. You know, we've got to set people up to succeed. We've got to, it's just like there's so many issues. And I feel like there's good intention, but intention is one thing and action and results are another.
Yeah, absolutely. I appreciate that insight. You know, some of these states are taking the initial steps of setting aside a certain amount of licenses for Black and Brown people. Massachusetts was one of the first states to actually write that into the law in the get-go rather than an afterthought, right? Mm-hmm. So, and there's something to be said about the multi-state operators versus small businesses. And one thing that I really love about the cannabis industry is that it does allow for small businesses, mom and pop businesses. That's like the backbone of America to me. Yeah. And not everything can go, not everything's a Walmart, right? Like,
yeah.
Like there's something to be said about shop local, support local.
Yeah.
And I like what you were saying about the cooperatives and allowing smaller businesses to work together rather than, you know, just becoming some MSO that's
and
whitewashed, right?
Just be eaten up, you know,
right.
And strip them of their essence and not allow for culture. Like cannabis and nature, it's all about biodiversity, right? That's how we achieve balance, right? And if we're gonna continue to just take the toxic trends and cultures of other industries and just plug them into all the leadership of all the major companies and all the money and all the capital, like, we're not gonna have these mom and pop brands. And yes, like, and that terrifies me because the quality products actually come from the mom and pop brands that care about us, don't care about minimizing so that profit is made and so that we get subpar products, whether it's flower or it's some kind of topical or whatever. Like, we work with brands that have an ethos of care, you know, and literally from the hiring to the cultivation of their plant, and even if they're outside of the cannabis industry, are making products and advocating for things that are organic and as clean as possible and sustainably packaged and everything, you know? So, like, I understand that there has to be a mix of both, and that's why I call for this biodiversity. But we have to have a fair shot, you know? We have to have a fair shot.
That's a beautiful way of putting it. Thank you.
Oh,
and, you know, NCIA is an organization that agrees with you, and we have a diversity, equity, and inclusion committee, as well as a scholarship program for those licensees as well, to give them that knowledge, that shared knowledge that our
information is power.
Right. So, but these are only small steps in the grander scheme of things.
For sure.
And some of the things you were mentioning are what I've been hearing from some others involved in those program as well. Just the knowledge, what you said about the information is only flowing to those with the money, right?
I mean, you're set up that way when you're making application fees so high.
Right.
Just having to wait, but knowing that people who've done it in other states already have a leg up, know that the MSOs that are already established in the medical market are also already set up. Like,
right.
You're so far behind. Like,
sure.
No, even when you begin, like, there's no way So it's just really, really a challenging thing. And it's like, there is opportunity for sure, but you've got to be smart. You got to build a great team. You've like, it's a lot of work.
Absolutely.
it's gotta take a lot of personalities and people. And I think that also is a thing for brands to be sustainable. Like, we're looking to get a license in New York. New York is also a state that's caring about social equity and about social justice in the conversation with automatic expungements, and also having, you know, a 50% goal. That's the problem there. Goal of equity, like minorities and whatever, because a goal, again, is an intention. And who is that? Like, what are the criteria for that? If it's just being a woman, or if it's just there's certain groups that are still privileged that are going to have more access to this.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just a little bit like we're waiting for these regs, but we're out here trying to figure out who could we partner with,
mm-hmm.
that's coming from California, that's already based in New York, that's in Toronto. We provide experience. We know community. We know culture. We're here to collaborate, you know? So I am excited for what's to come, for sure.
That's great. Well, I'm so glad that you were able to attend our conference this year.
Me too.
What are some of your other goals while you're here? Are there any panel sessions you're looking forward to?
Yeah, so I just want to say I'm so grateful to be here. It has been so much fun so far. I went to like a sustainability working session yesterday, and it was really impactful.
Great.
And just a great opportunity to share, you know, perspective on sustainability and social justice and equity in that conversation, not, you know. And then I think just meeting so many incredible people, folks going from like URL to IRL. We've been like talking on IG forever, and now we're finally meeting. That is just like the best moment, and being able to puff together outside and get high. I'm just
that.
Like, yes.
Yes.
It's like really beautiful to be in community here. So this is just great. And I guess with regards to actual conversations, I want to check out Vince from Nabis is talking on a Cannabis panel tomorrow, as well as Khadija Tribble from Cureleaf. So I want to check out those two conversations.
Great.
This morning I heard the parent company in conversation with Mary Mag. Adrian is...
Oh, Beyonce's
that's
husband?
Also, yeah. Beyonce's husband. Oh, no. That guy wasn't there, but...
Right, yeah.
What's his name?
His
Troy.
Partner.
Troy.
Yes.
Yeah.
Troy
the business guy.
Yes.
The business guy. He was there.
Mm-hmm.
And so the culture wasn't, but the business guy was there. And then, yeah, Adrian, we know him from Brooklyn, so it was just great to see him on stage. Yeah, and I'm just excited to roam the floor and check out the different offerings in Bloom, and it's just been so dope. So thank you for having me.
Absolutely. Yeah. Hopefully you get a chance to run into Mike Lamuto, who is our DEI manager as
cool.
well.
Yeah.
He ran our social equity workshop yesterday as well.
Okay, no doubt.
So he's a great person to connect with too while you're here.
Yes, for sure. I also got to say Seyun from Elevate.
Oh,
he's
yeah.
the homie. We love to take glamour shots together because he's swaglicious. Shout out.
Absolutely.
So thank you, NCIA. This is a bomb.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for being here. I hope you have a great rest of your experience, and it was lovely to sit down with you.
Oh, thank you so much.
And I'm so excited to be in this podcast studio here on the expo floor. I get to see faces and people, including my friend here, Mark Ross, who has a role with Vicente Cederberg, one of the groups that are responsible for helping to legalize cannabis for adult use 7 years ago. Welcome to my podcast studio, Mark.
Thanks, Bethany. It's a pleasure to be here.
So we know this isn't your first NCIA show. I've definitely seen you around for years. But how does it feel to be back after a couple years of kind of being virtual because of the COVID-19 pandemic?
You know, it's been fantastic. For this industry, it's so essential for us to be able to get together in person and really connect. It's just been essential, and it's been so challenging in the last couple of years. What I have found so interesting in the last 3 months is just the enthusiasm for live events, and it just seems that there's one after another. It seems like it's almost every other week. In the last week, there were three. It's so essential for the business of this industry that we be able to gather and talk and chat and share ideas and explore new opportunities. And so this is a great place to do it.
Absolutely. And it's a little bit different, right? We did require proof of vaccination, and everybody's wearing their fashionable face masks as well. Very nice. I like the tie-dye. Oh, yeah. There's some good fashion here on the expo floor. But what are your goals here at this conference?
Well, first off, I was asked to speak at Cannavest. So that's my first goal. I'm on a tremendous panel with Khadijah Tribble from Curaleaf and Steve Hawkins from USCC. And being able to talk about my passion, which is environmental, social, and governance. Beyond that, it's to reconnect with the industry and continue to tell the story about why this industry can and must do better around those areas. Environmental, social, and governance, and how we can do it in a very thoughtful, business-oriented, ROI-driven way. And then it's also just to see friends and reconnect with my West Coast homies and my national homies and be able to share bad or old times and new times. So
yeah, you bet. I noticed that you said that events like this are essential for us to get together, and it reminded me of early 2020 in the strictest of pandemic lockdowns when cannabis was deemed an essential business and we were allowed to operate in most states where it was legal for adults. Wasn't that kind of groundbreaking for the legitimizing our industry?
It was absolutely surprising and also amazing. I mean, you and I are both in Denver, Colorado,
right,
where for about an hour they decided to close down dispensaries, and that was a disaster.
The hour. We survived.
We survived the hour without cannabis. But it just tells, it's just a testament to how far the movement has come with regard to educating politicians and the general public about how this is an essential medicine for millions and millions of people around the world. And I think that was reflected in every single state declaring it essential.
Absolutely. The only one was Massachusetts. I wag my finger at Massachusetts, but every other adult use state did deem it essential. So let's talk about your history with NCIA. You've been a member in a couple of capacities before you joined the team at VS. What's it been like being involved in this national trade association with big multi-state operators all the way down to mom and pop boutique cannabis companies?
You know, I first got involved in NCIA in 2016, and I'm forever indebted to the organization because I came to the organization with the idea of conducting the first employee engagement survey to really find out what employees in the industry cared about with regard to their jobs, whether it's salary or benefits, but also about what they cared about with regard to community engagement and sustainability, and nothing like that had ever been done before for the industry with a trade association like yours, and then you all gave me the tools and the opportunity to do that and create a white paper out of it, which served me well in launching my career in the cannabis industry. So back then, it was a much different industry than it is now. Obviously, every year is different. It's the whole dog years thing.
Yeah.
There are so many other players now. What I'm finding interesting, though, in watching my little window on the industry, which again deals with social impact, community impact, sustainability, is that more companies are talking about it. And I think that's a reflection of a few things. One is you have more people from outside industries, consumer packaged goods, alcohol, health and beauty products, that understand that there's an ROI and a business imperative to engage on these issues. And so you have growth in that area. And then you have more companies that are also seeing an opportunity to differentiate themselves from their competition around these same issues. And then, of course, you have the perfect storm of Black Lives Matter and the George Floyd tragedy and climate change happening very quickly and water resources becoming less, while renewable energy opportunities are becoming cheaper for companies to utilize. And you have this amazing gumbo of activism coming together in a new way in this industry. And so I've watched it evolve over the last 6 years in that way. And I'm so excited about what 2022 and 2023 and 2024 can bring in these areas about which I am so passionate.
I'm curious, what brought you to cannabis? What is your relationship to the plant, the movement, and the industry?
I've been a cannabis, I don't want to say user, because user sounds like you're an addict.
Enthusiast.
I have utilized cannabis for a number of reasons. One is just for chronic pain and for skiing and things like that. I started utilizing cannabis, I remember, in high school was the first time I tried it, and utilized it through college, and mainly recreationally, creativity, in that way. But my relationship with cannabis has only grown deeper over the years, as I have found in very efficient ways to help cure what ails me. And also, I have found, as the parent of a young child, it has given me a tremendous amount of patience, and also the ability to problem solve with a child, which has, I never thought I would use cannabis in this way, but it has allowed me to be more patient and more empathetic, and just more creative and problem solving with the issues that he has from time to time, as 11-year-olds are wont to do. So my relationship has gone from more of a fun creativity to more of a medicinal use while I live in an adult use state.
Right, right. Thinking about adult use states, medical states, you know, we're filling out that map across the U.S., state by state.
Three more to go.
Right. we're going to start taking bets on which state's going to be the last holdout, right? So a few years ago, we used to say that federal legalization's coming. We're so close. It's going to be 2020, right? Oh, wait, that was last year, and it's pretty much 2022 now. So what's do you have a prediction, an updated prediction, if you will, for federal legalization? No crystal ball?
I'm going to say the same thing I said if you asked me 4 years ago, last time I was on this podcast, 3 to 5 years, which is what it just seems like. It's always 3 to 5 years out. You know, I don't know. I would love to see it sooner. My fear about being arrested for cannabis has gone down tremendously with each passing year.
Oh, yeah.
And so I would like to see it federally legalized for a number of reasons. One, from an environmental standpoint, it doesn't make sense to do some of the practices that we are doing, that we are forced to do by having, you know, 50 different states with cannabis. It just doesn't make sense. The efficiencies aren't there. Right. And so I would love to, from an environmental standpoint, and a sustainability standpoint, see it happen sooner rather than later. And I think that's one of the main levers we pull with all of this legislation. And we explain to legislators, look, there's an environmental imperative here. From a social standpoint as well, there are other opportunities to having a national system. From a social equity standpoint, there are reasons to have it. From a big operator standpoint, the efficiencies of supply chain, it just makes more sense. It is insane how we do things. There's no other industry that has to operate like this. And so I don't know when it's going to happen. I think anyone that tells you when it's going to happen is probably a fool. But I work with some of the brightest people in this industry that, as you mentioned, you know, help legalize cannabis, and they move, you know, our folks move from state to state and helping write laws around the country, around the world, around cannabis. And so it's, if my bosses can't tell me and my colleagues can't tell me when federal legalization is going to happen, I'd be a fool to tell you when it's going to happen.
Well, we're really glad to have you as a member of NCIA and in multiple capacities over the years as well. Our committees have really gotten more sophisticated. We have 14 industry sector committees now, ranging from cultivation to human resources. And this concept of sustainability, I'm hearing, is environmental. But there's also some of the things you were mentioning fall under this greater idea of creating sustainability for our industry. And that includes the social aspect as well as compensation, you know, compensating our people so they stay in our industry. Is that kind of where you're working kind of in your concepts there as well?
My position as head of impact and ESG for Vicente Cederberg is almost like a consulting group within a law firm. So it's doing what I've been doing for the last several years in the industry with a small interruption of me going to a multi-state operator to help them build a corporate responsibility program. But yeah, it touches on all of those areas. And what I love about NCIA's approach to this lately has been, I've been part of the City of Denver's Cannabis Sustainability Work Group for almost 6 years now. And we put out a best management practices guide in 2016. And now NCIA has taken some of that work and built upon it, making it a much larger conversation with a much larger megaphone than we could have ever done from the work group out of the City of Denver, which is a public-private partnership. And so the approach that NCIA is taking to touch on all of these issues around environmental sustainability, social impact, social equity, governance, because you do have lawyers as well as part of NCIA, it's the right approach for this particular kind of trade association. Trade associations outside of cannabis focus on this as well, in consumer packaged goods and in other trade associations. But what NCIA does with regard to this is, frankly, very smart. And I think that area of the organization should and probably will continue to grow as more and more consumers and companies start to embrace these concepts.
Yeah, and something I was thinking of earlier is the idea of interstate commerce. And this can play into environmental issues as well, simply because of climate in certain states versus others, right? I think there's an idea that we could reduce our carbon footprint if we're a little smarter about where and how we are growing and cultivating cannabis. What are your thoughts there?
For sure. No question about it. I mean, it does not make sense for us to be growing cannabis in warehouses in cold climates.
Right.
Obviously, we're going to have boutique and craft cannabis, and that's going to continue to happen. But we don't need to do it on large scales, when we have federal legalization. Mm-hmm. It's not like we grow coffee in Washington, in the state of Washington, in a warehouse. It's not like we grow corn in Maine. These are not, it doesn't make sense from an efficiency standpoint, from a supply chain standpoint, and most of all from a sustainability standpoint. Now, there are going to be other issues that come up then with what's called Scope 3 emissions, which deal with transportation, or Scope 2 as well. Because if we start trucking and shipping and flying cannabis all over the world, that's a different kind of carbon footprint.
Sure.
That's not to say that we won't be able to address it, and we won't be able to reduce it, and we won't be able to minimize it. But that's going to be the next evolutionary discussion around at least climate and cannabis.
Awesome. Yeah. A lot of work to be done in this industry for sure, but we're all in this together.
Luckily, I'm still young.
Well, thank you for sitting down with us today, Mark. I'm going to let you get back to the show floor to see all of our friends and colleagues and get some good education in. Thank you for sitting down with me.
Thanks for having me, Bethany. This has been great. Keep up the great work.
The opinions expressed on this CannabisRadio.com program are those of the guests and hosts and do not necessarily reflect those of the staff and management of CannabisRadio.com. Any rebroadcast, republication, or retransmission of this program without proper consent is prohibited.